We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and FM 90.9 HD2. You'll find us online at will.illinois.edu, W-I-L-L.illinois.edu. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in this afternoon. Well, the growing season is fast coming to a close. So this afternoon, we'll look at the season we've had. We'll talk about what we might put into the ground now. And as many gardeners do, begin thinking about next spring, next year. Listeners, I invite your fall gardening questions about herbs, vegetables, flowers, trees, and shrubs for Chuck Voigt and Diane Noland. Diane Noland is the host of the WILL TV program, Illinois Gardener. She's also a teaching associate in the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences at the University of Illinois. Chuck Voigt is also with the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences. He's an extension specialist in the area of vegetable crops. Our guests are the co-authors of books for the general reader, Chuck together with J.S. Vandermark, who is co-author of Vegetable Gardening in the Midwest. Diane Noland is co-author with Kirsten Bolin of Perennials for the Landscape. Illinois Gardener, which you can see on our companion station WILL-TV on Thursdays at 7 p.m. and on Saturday mornings at 11 o'clock, may also be seen on public television stations throughout Illinois from Chicago to Carbondale. And you can hear the show's audio on this radio station on Saturday mornings at 6:30. Listeners, join us with your questions, comments. Join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number. That number, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Good to see you guys. Well, I don't think, did we even get together this year in the springtime?
We did one, I think, really early, maybe.
But not
early.
Summer. It was summer. Must have been a busy summer.
Our people didn't get together.
No.
And summers, it's great to be here.
Summers were past Labor Day. It was kind of a wacky summer, the temperature.
Very good adjective.
Yes,
very
wacky.
Unique.
So how did your gardens fare?
Slow start and then kaboom. It just really did well at the end and now still. But very slow start, wouldn't you say, Chuck?
Very slow start. Great start for weeds.
Yes.
Yeah. Hard to keep up. With, you know, hard to do things on schedule because every time we'd get ready, it would rain.
Yeah, you told me you had a hard time getting the sweet potatoes in this year.
I did, and hard to maintain them. They're a borderline disaster, but hopefully I can maintain the varieties and wait till next year.
Yeah. Well, it was so wet and so cool, and then things started to chug along, and now we're at this point where
now
it's
we're
really
somewhat
dry.
Summery and dry. Right.
Right. Yeah, if you'd known what the season was going to do, you could have grown cool season crops pretty much through the whole season.
Yeah, I started parsley really late, and it was just
Oh, it's
fun.
Great. And the broccoli, cauliflower was the best year I ever had for cauliflower. Really good kohlrabi. That's, and I'm still harvesting it because I did it in succession. So, and those are cooler things. And
right.
They did well.
And what are you doing with your bounty?
Well, the kohlrabi, we eat it fresh, or maybe sauteed. But usually we eat it fresh, and it's really good. But I did freeze some of the broccoli.
Do you like slice it up and use it to dip into things?
Oh, yes. Yeah. It's good in ribbons and then, you know, a little bit of saute, too. But we like it best fresh, a little bit of dip.
Yeah. Are the sweet potatoes ready yet, or they're still...
Anybody who got them in on time could probably start to harvest some of the good early varieties now. You know, mine are going to have to stay out until they freeze just to try to squeeze the season out of them because they were it's hard to look at even if they're so pathetic.
Well, you can have a company with some of the tomato growers. Folks have been having a hard time with tomatoes this year, and I've had a great bounty, but there's a lot of the leaf spots, and you just have to keep those dead leaves picked off and try to prevent any other spread. But for me, I planted my potato or tomatoes very far apart, single rows, and I think the ventilation helped. I mulch, so there's no soil coming back up on the tomato.
Doesn't splash onto the lower leaves and start the climb.
And I've had some nearly spotless tomatoes this summer. But if you pack them in, you don't mulch, it really has been wonderful for diseases and leaf spots.
Yeah. We've seen some stuff in the yard, too. It's even on, you know, the hosta, a couple of hosta in the yard really took a yuck.
So it gives you an idea if you want to move to the Pacific Northwest or England. I mean, we really did have that kind of weather early on in the summer.
And the Pacific Northwest was like 106.
And they had dry.
That's right.
We flip-flopped with them.
I like this better than that.
I didn't water hardly at all. Just to, well, a lot of times when you put things in the ground, it was too wet at the time. But really no supplemental watering until now.
Yep.
Until now.
Yeah, well, the banana slugs are probably on the march coming this way from the Pacific Northwest.
Hope not.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. We're talking about gardening this afternoon with Diane Noland and Chuck Voigt. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, join us with your questions, comments, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Toll free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Let's talk with a listener now in St. Charles on line 4. Hi.
Hey, good morning. How's everybody? Or good afternoon, I mean.
Good afternoon. We're fine. How are you?
I'm doing okay. You know what? I'm worried about my tomatoes. I know they're just now starting to turn red, and I got the sneaking suspicion we're going to end up getting hit with a frost early again like we did the last couple of years. And my question would be, the last couple of years I put tarps on them, and it didn't seem to stop the frost from getting through there. So I had that clear plastic, you know, like pink drop cloth, and it didn't seem to keep the frost from getting to them. The other thing is, too, my wife's basil is getting inundated with those Japanese beetles, and I've never seen it. They're not going after the usual plants. They were on my arborvitae and my basil, but they weren't on the roses like they had last year.
Huh.
It's really strange. It's a strange year. I'm trying to figure out a way I can grow this stuff in the, you know, during the wintertime inside my basement, because I miss having tomatoes, and it gets so expensive during January, February.
Okay, what are you going to start with, Chuck?
Well, let's
start with the tarp.
Okay.
Plastic is not the best to use.
Plastic, it transmits the heat and the cold too well. So something that's a poorer conductor of heat, something in the cloth range or like a regular
old
canvas tarp,
right?
Not a plastic tarp would probably be better. As far as basil, some of the cultivars, just the Japanese beetles just seem to travel long distances. The thing we have noticed is if you keep the flowers picked off the basil, the flowers seem to be what draws them in. And then once they're there, they secrete a feeding hormone that says, come on down, all my brothers and sisters, we found heaven here. So if you can keep the blossoms picked off and maybe pick off the first ones that you see, you can maybe break that cycle.
Wow, I don't think I've ever seen Japanese beetles on basil.
I didn't have it on mine. They did feed very well on my porcelain vine, and I did try to keep them picked off. You know, the first ones, you can get soapy water, and usually at night they're a little calmer, and you just sort of tap them, and they'll drop in. But, you know, it wasn't as many as other years, but it was quite a few. Okay. It was quite a few.
Well, for this caller, if the time comes and we're looking at a hard freeze.
Oh yes, we do have to address
that.
Well, there's this great movie, and this great movie called Fried Green Tomatoes. I mean, a lot of times you cannot get them to ripen, but before a frost, I mean, you have to guess, and if you're wrong, then you've got a lot of tomatoes already picked. But I put them in brown paper bags, and I don't have them too. I just have a single layer. And usually the ethylene production will let them ripen a little bit if they have any red at all.
Otherwise, the other thing is, if you're pretty sure that it's going to frost or freeze, you can pull up the whole plant and hang it somewhere out of the way in a back part of the garage or somewhere. And if hanging on the vine, they can draw a little more nutrition out of it as they try to ripen, as opposed to just sitting on a counter somewhere. So that might help you a little bit.
Okay. Put the paper bag with the tomatoes in a sunny spot?
I just put them on my kitchen counter. I don't really want them to heat up. It's really just the ethylene production that will produce. But most of the times it needs to have a little bit of red to let it keep going. So the really green ones, it doesn't work as well.
Yeah, that would work on what they call mature greens. But anything that's true green, you might want to make dilled green tomatoes or fried green tomatoes. Or.
And that's actually really good.
There's some relishes you can make out of green tomatoes.
Yes. I bet you could do a nice chutney.
Yes, you could.
Okay. Let's take another call. A listener in Urbana, line one. Hi.
A suggestion for the caller who had problems with the plastic tarps. If he can put a framework above so that the tarp isn't touching the plant, and then bring it down over the side of the plant and keep it up, that probably is going to be more successful.
Greenhouse effect.
Yes, exactly.
Act like the high tunnels that the growers are using now to extend the season.
The other thing was something I did this year. For years I've been pruning my tomatoes and throwing the pruned part away. This year I took about 20 of them and stuck them into pots of starting soil and put them in a prop box, thinking, well, some of my plants might die. And I ended up with about 20 of the most beautiful starter plants that I planted about the end of June.
And they're just right.
They're just ripening now, and they are even better than the early ones that were very good.
That is excellent, because this year when you planted them was really the start a little bit more of summer. And what you were trimming off, were you trimming off the suckers?
What forms? Yes.
I wanted to talk about that because that's a really great technique, but a lot of people just let the tomatoes completely, everything that forms, they keep it on there, and that's chuck, and that's half of mine. I started off, but when I worked in tomato production when I was in college, they would, we would remove the suckers. And when you have the main branch, and then you've got the major branch, you know, the main trunk, in quotes, then you have major branches, you'll get that little 45-degree angle plant, you know, the little start that comes up. That's the sucker. And that's what you were removing and propagating. And if you take those off, you get bigger plants and fewer. But if you leave them on, you get a whole lot.
Yes, I grow on a trellis and an indeterminate variety. And I just have to get those off.
You have to, because otherwise it will almost be too much. You can't ever trellis them, and it does work well. So that's really interesting about you propagating those suckers. That's interesting.
I was just amazed. It took about 2 weeks for them to really get going, and they were as thick as my little finger, maybe the stems, much more vigorous than seedlings. So I guess I'll do it again as a backup measure.
I kind of like that idea. I might try that myself, because you always need, if you have 10 tomatoes, you always need a few more. And then you wish in August you didn't, but it's still fun.
Yeah.
More the merrier. Thank you. That was a good comment.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guests this afternoon, Diane Noland and Chuck Voigt. They are with the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Sciences at the University of Illinois. And they come on the Afternoon Magazine from time to time to talk about gardening. And the growing season kind of got away from us this year, but we're talking about what happened and why and what we haven't talked about this yet, what we might put in the ground now. So anyway, listeners, if you've got questions, comments, join us. 333-9455 is the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number, that number 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. So what could we put in now? What kind of cool weather things could we put in?
With sunny days and cool nights, that is perfect for radishes, which can be a row marker for lettuce and spinach. Oh, there's other. It's a little too close to frost for peas. You'd have to get really.
Some of the greens, the quick greens like turnip greens and mustard greens,
right.
would come within probably 30 days now and mm-hmm. hold into until really cold temperatures freeze them, which would be quite a ways down the scale.
Mm-hmm. So there's not a lot left to plant, but there's still having fresh greens just right. is so nice.
Yeah.
And when I say using radish for a row marker, I just put radish along the lettuce row, radish along the spinach row, and they come up, literally, I water them a lot. They come up within days.
Right.
And then you know where.
That works really well on things that are slow in the spring, mm-hmm. like carrots and parsnips and some of those things that you wonder if they're ever going to make it up. If you have a radish there, you can cultivate
so the
weeds don't take over totally.
Okay, let's take another call. A listener in Champaign now. Line one, hi.
I've got tomatoes that are in the ground right now, and they've grown up really big and beautiful, but every single tomato on the vine has just stayed green all season. Is there anything I can do to get those to ripen up quicker?
Are they in full sun?
Yes, they are.
Wow. We're looking at each other. I mean, mine started slow, but they did ripen.
Yeah, mine were 3 or 4 weeks late, but not this late.
I'm going to ask about fertilization. Did you fertilize at all?
I fertilized early on for about the first 2 weeks that they were in the ground, and then have stopped fertilizing since then.
That's good, because high nitrogen fertilizer will keep flowers from forming. It will encourage leaves, but you do have the tomatoes on the plant. So
when yeah. did you plant them?
It would have been back in May.
Wow.
Okay.
They went into the end of the garden, and so they've had tomatoes on them now for a month and a half, probably.
Wow.
If not longer, and not a single one has ripened.
Well, I have a feeling in May and early June they may have gone into that cold weather shock,
yeah.
and you know then that takes a while for them to get out of it. What do you think, Chuck?
I'm amazed. I thought mine were bad because they were like 3 or 4 weeks late, but that was 4 or 5 weeks ago. So it's mystifying to me. I don't know of a variety that's that much later than the others that it should just be that late. So it's
right. One of them is just a Roma tomato plant, and last year everything went great. The only thing that I did different this year is I did put that fertilizer on there early on. And they've just sat there green on the vine.
Now, that fertilizer, it wasn't a slow-release fertilizer, was it? Was it a straight?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't think it was.
Well, Roma should have been going like crazy, you know, with
yeah.
that little bit of delay, but then like crazy. Did you rotate your crops? Are your tomatoes in the same spot that they were last year?
They are in the same spot that they were last year.
But still, usually that causes disease problems, not so much a delay. But you might want to think about moving those other places and don't rotate them with potatoes because those are in the same family.
Okay.
But that is a mystery. It should, if you have enough sun and you didn't over-fertilize and we allowed for the 3 or 4 week delay by putting it in when we thought it should be warm, but it became a colder, wetter early spring and summer, they should be ripening. And now we're in a very close window here of not having much time for them to ripen. So
right.
Hmm.
And one of them, I mean, there was a batch of 3 tomatoes that I've been keeping an eye on because I saw them come on one of the vines, and I was like, okay, there's some good-looking tomatoes, and they've gotten to a certain size, and they just kind of stopped growing and just sat there green.
I wonder if he should send a sample to the plant clinic just because it's...
Just because it's weird?
Yeah, because it should be doing something.
Yeah. I don't know. It's almost too late for pruning out some of the foliage to speed them up, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, you could. Are they really big and bushy? Are they getting light into the plant?
They're pretty big and bushy, but and they're getting light into the plant. And the tomatoes themselves, this particular bunch is out and pretty well exposed.
That's
great.
So it's
not like these are in the shade.
And it's not a green variety because Romas are red. I have a green zebra variety in it. You know, that's it. That's what you get. Yeah. But just one plant.
Now, they are in a spot that does get a good bit of rainwater, and it can build up in there, so the ground is generally pretty moist.
But if it drains well, though, does it drains well?
It doesn't sit on the surface, but, I mean,
then that
between
should.
Rains, the ground doesn't really dry up all that much. All I could think of is that we've gotten so much rain that, you know, maybe that was delaying it a little bit.
In any other year, that might have been absolutely ideal, but early on it might have been too much. But right now, I would think it would be just ideal, even hold some moisture when we're somewhat dry. Yeah. I'm going to officially say, I do not know. Do you have...
I concur.
That is a mystery.
Well, I'll keep an eye on them, and if they start to ripen up, I'll give you a call back.
I hope they do.
Well, hopefully the soil will warm up as it's drying out now. So I would say don't water them, even though we're in a dry spell, because you want to stress them a little bit to try to convince them that now's the time.
Now or never.
That was what I was wondering, is if I could go ahead and stress them a little bit to get them to kick over.
I think yes is the answer to that.
Yeah.
Don't lie, okay. Stress.
Maybe don't kick him or anything. But
yeah, don't beat him with a hoe handle. But
give him a stern talking to.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Other questions, comments are invited for our guests. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Chuck Voigt and Diane Noland are our guests this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. Let's take another call. A listener in Urbana, line two. Hello.
Hello. I've got a long shot idea on the tomatoes that won't ripen.
Okay.
I don't know whether the ripening is controlled by whether they're photosensitive, but I know in the years that I was farming, when I had soybeans underneath all night lights at highway interchanges, they will not ripen. They will set pods, but they will stay green until frost. So if there's any possibility that something has changed there, that there's some sort of an all-night light like a street light or a backyard light that is on, if tomatoes are photosensitive, that might be preventing them from ripening. I don't know if they're in the same family.
Yeah, I don't normally think of tomatoes as being photosensitive, but if there's a light there and he can turn it off, that would certainly be worth a shot.
I know that when you see trees, that they will not color up. It's just like the soybeans. The closer they are to the light, they stay green, and the farther away, then they will go into their fall color. So night lights are not good if you're a gardener. You know, just have it on. Don't have one on all the time. Just so, and it's not good. It's not green anyway, but it's really not good for plants to have lights on all the time. But it may be, that could be what it is, and something's changed. So good comment. I'm not sure though.
Thanks for the call. Other calls are invited. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. We had a pretty good display. Speaking of having the lights off, we had a pretty good display this year of lightning bugs.
Oh, yes. It was good for that and just beautiful nights. It was really very pretty.
You could sit out there, and the mosquitoes weren't bad this year either, were they?
Which is surprising with some of the moisture, but it was early.
Yeah.
Speaking of moisture, I want to put a plug in about getting your fall mums planted and watering those in, because people wait until it's well into the fall, and this September is really a good time to get them in, help them to get some roots established, water them in well, and then after the frost, if you just trim off the flowers, then keep the leaves because it mulches it in. But some of the mums will not be winter hardy if you plant them too late.
Yeah, people tend to put them in a display in the front yard in the pot.
Forever.
And then when it gets like freezing cold, they dig a hole and throw them in the ground.
It's November, and you go, let's transplant.
Why didn't
and
it
then
live?
Wonder why they don't live and blame who they bought the mum from.
Not their fault, but get them in early, get the roots established, trim back just the faded flowers, not the foliage, keep them well watered, and mulch. Apply some aged okay. mulch or compost.
And now through maybe mid-October would be enough time?
I'd say
now.
As soon as possible.
Yes. ASAP.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and just grind up some leaves or something and mulch them with that.
Plenty of those in the near future.
Yeah, people wonder what to do with them anyway.
Okay, let's take another call. A listener in Urbana on line one. Hi. Line one?
Yes.
Hi.
Hi. I've got a tree. I've got a tree in my backyard, and I think it's an ash. I don't know. What do ashes look like? What does a leaf look like on an ash?
It's an uneven pinnate compound leaf, so it would have probably 5 or 7 leaflets attached.
Looks ladder-like. Okay. You know, if you think about the leaves
opposite. With a slightly bigger one at the tip.
Right.
That's not it. It has small leaves that are kind of like oval.
Oh, is that a honey locust? Really, really small leaflets?
Yeah, and it's a small tree. It's not a big tree, and it's not a super small one, but it's in medium size.
Hmm. That's possible.
Well,
but it's not an ash. Because they're fairly big.
If it doesn't have a compound leaf, it's not an ash.
Yeah, I was wondering because the tree is it's dying. I think it's sick.
Has it just been changing colors lately? Because it could be an early fall color response.
The leaves are all dry. A lot of them are dry already.
And this year,
they haven't fallen, but they're dry. Some of them have fallen, but not very many.
Get a you might want to get an actual ID of that, and you may have to send that to the extension office closer to you so you know what kind of leaf it is. But the leaves are coloring early this year. I've seen them start to color and brown in August this year. So I wouldn't, but we need to know what the tree is before we can really discuss more of that. But it's an early response.
I was
this
wondering
year.
If it was sick because the bark is dry. But maybe that's the way the tree is supposed to look. I don't remember it being like that. I remember the bark of the tree, the trunk and everything being more supple.
Right. And if the leaves went from green to brown without anything in between, that's another pretty good sign that it's in trouble as opposed to just thinking that it's fall already.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I don't think it's just fall already.
Because
I was sitting there looking at it. So I don't know. Now, I called in a long time ago about my Creeping Charlie back there. And the Creeping Charlie is around the tree. Could that cause the tree to... Could it attack the tree, the Creeping Charlie?
No.
No, no, it's bad for grass in the shade, but not for a tree.
Woody ornamentals.
Okay.
Right.
So I'd have to find somebody to tell me what to do with that tree.
Right.
Well, get it identified first of all, and then that will help with everything else.
Okay.
Was there any equipment that ran over the roots, or it could be that we've had some wet springs. We've had 2 springs of flooding and then drying out, and that's very hard on trees.
You mean equipment? What do you mean equipment? I'm working my backyard.
Tractor or truck, where you
that
actually...
might have been.
Where you're running over the root system.
I don't think I ran over the root system. There's,
maybe if it's near it. But any kind of disturbance.
Yeah,
anything that you change. Right.
Well, I had to take a tree limb down, so maybe that's what did it.
But it would have to be more of a heavy equipment.
Yeah, I would think taking one tree limb down would probably not be a big issue.
Okay, let's go and take another call now. A listener in Mattoon, line 4. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
I'd like your opinion on planting garlic. In the past, I've planted it sometimes in late September, other times early October, and... last couple of years, the bulbs have been a little smaller.
Sir, you have asked the best question to the best expert in the state right here. Take it, Chuck.
I recommend the first 2 weeks of October as being pretty ideal for planting most of the garlic cultivars that we can get a hold of. So you haven't been too very far off of that. The garlic that matured in 2007 and the garlic that matured in 2008, I had a devil of a time getting it to come through the winter. So I think that was probably a bit of an issue the last couple of years. So where for a long time I got by without mulching or doing anything, I'm kind of back to recommending that you do put a mulch on it at about the time the ground freezes so that it doesn't freeze and thaw. Because typically when I've lost it, it's come up and is looking pretty good, and you can see the little green sprouts. And then in the spring, the little green sprouts just don't do anything, and then pretty soon they're brown sprouts.
I've tried covering them with leaves after, you know, it starts getting real cold.
Right. That's
just cover both rows. I usually plant one row of elephant and one row of the regular.
Okay.
And I cover them with leaves, and I just wonder, is mulch or something like that better? But I always thought leaves might be okay.
I would think leaves would be pretty good mulch. If you can chop them up a little bit, they would be even better because they some kinds of leaves have a little bit of a tendency to mat down if they're whole. Elephant garlic is a little less hardy than the regular garlic, so that some years that can be an issue. As far as getting it to size up, you would recommend that you give it a feeding as soon as it's off and growing early in the spring, you know, whether that's commercial fertilizer that's high in nitrogen or some sort of an organic fertilizer that's high in nitrogen.
You mean you sprinkle it on the rows?
Yeah, just kind of side dress it along there, or if it's a liquid, you could spray it along there. Do that early in the season, and then again, I would say do it about the time mid-April, and then maybe again in mid-May, and then don't do it again because as it gets ready to start maturing, you don't want to encourage it to try to grow any longer. So, a couple of feedings early seem to really grow the plant bigger so that when it gets the response to make the bulb, it's got a lot of energy stored in the leaves that it can transfer down into the bulb. So that's...
I have been mixing some fertilizer with the dirt, mm-hmm. and I plant raised rows.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I raise
that's
the rows,
good.
And usually why just that fertilizer when I plant, and then... I think one time I sprinkled, someone said, oh, why don't you put Miracle-Gro on it, liquid. I'd never tried that.
Yeah, I think a couple of feedings of that would probably maximize your bulb size in the spring.
The Miracle-Gro?
Yeah, or you know, any other, it doesn't have to be that brand name, but something that's kind of, it's mainly nitrogen that it wants in the spring. You know, give it a good complete fertilizer when you're planting it with phosphorus and potassium, and then mainly just spike it with some high nitrogen source. About the time farmers start planting corn around here, and then about a month after that, and then stop because in June they're going to be wanting to bulb and start to die down.
To get on another subject, I had some advice that maybe on my tomatoes, where they haven't been doing so well, to put some lime on there early in the spring, or put lime on it in the fall.
Do a soil test. Don't ever just add lime because you think it might help. Because if you don't need lime, it's going to make things a lot. It's going to throw a lot of other things off. So unless you do a soil test that tells you need to add lime, don't.
Okay, well, that's what I was considering, soil test. Thank you.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You.
Next, we take a call from a listener in McLean County on line two. Hello.
Hi. I have a couple questions, pretty please. One of them is about we have a garden where we put our vegetables and stuff in, and this year, and maybe it's just the strange weather we've been talking about, and that is we put peas. Quite a bit of peas and spinach and Swiss chard, and none of them came out. And I'm wondering if I should put compost or something. Could I put anything in the, like this fall or in early spring, put something to loosen up the dirt a little more?
Absolutely.
And what would I put?
Well, any of those things you mentioned, if you can get compost, grind up the leaves that fall, work that in. Okay. It's virtually impossible to add too much organic matter to your garden soil. So
anything aged. I mean, some people have a bale of straw that has been laying around. That is wonderful when it just sort of falls apart. Really old aged bark chips almost become like soil after 3 or 4 years if you haven't spread them out.
Yeah, but don't use fresh ones because
it has to be aged.
Right.
Okay. So then you put that in the spring, not now. I mean, you don't want to till and stuff now, do you?
Sure.
You can do it now.
Sure. I've spread like 4 or 5 inches of leaves and tilled it in the fall.
Put it on top and let it be and then till it in the spring?
Well, that's going to keep it awfully wet underneath if you do that. It's kind of better to have it mixed in the fall, and then the microbes and the earthworms, whatever, a lot of it is going to be incorporated into the soil by the time you work it up again in the spring. So anything you can get worked in now, I think, is a plus.
Okay, all right. Thank you. And the second question is about aphids. We've had real problems with aphids on our bell peppers, or our peppers, period. Have you heard of people having much success with using ladybugs, or what do you recommend?
Introducing ladybugs, I don't know that that's going to have the effect you want, right on a plant because they're too mobile. They fly around. They go all over the place. I would think some sort of a spray, if you don't want to use a chemical spray, then something like an insecticidal soap, I think, works pretty well on aphids, especially when they're young and kind of tender skinned. So
you could even wash off little bucket.
Just a fairly strong spritz of water because the ones that are doing most of the feeding are not real mobile. And once they're off the plant, it's hard for them to find their way back up to the tips.
And some of our nice, strong rains take care of that for us.
Okay.
It's a natural.
So if you wash them off, my thinking was because somebody else had mentioned that if you wash them off, can't they just fly back on? Because don't they fly?
Dip them in a little bucket of soapy water, on your,
aphids are funny because there's like a few adult things that are making all the babies, and they might have wings, but most of the ones that are doing all the sucking on the plants
are just
do
there.
Not. They just have little legs, and they're not good climbers.
Okay. And how would you sort of say about the soapy water?
Insecticidal soap, or insecticidal soap is a special kind of soap that doesn't harm the plant, but kind of upsets the water relations and whatever in the bugs and kills them, or just a spray of water is not a bad thing.
And I've also been known to
detergent to add to your sprayer and use that.
Okay.
Well, I've been known just to take, after you wash a few dishes, and I'll look, the peppers are right there, and you're gonna. I mean, I always use that water as well, and I look for something that needs to be rinsed off, and I've just used that. So not real greasy, not meat scraps, but just a little bit of soap and water.
So if I just wanted to start with a scratch, maybe just a couple of, if I use a sprayer to try to wash them off, because you can get a lot of pressure that way, could I use that, or should I talk about just using a water hose?
No, that
water hose would work.
Water hose would work.
Give it a little bit of pressure.
Depending on how bad you need the water, if you can get the pressure in it better on a sprayer, that's not bad either, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I was just trying to use, because I heard someone say one time that don't use a homemade insecticidal soap, or don't use detergent from your sink. I mean, from your kitchen,
Well, that's usually the recommendation, but sometimes a professional will get away with things that we won't recommend to the amateur.
I don't do it daily, and I don't have aphids either, so I guess I haven't had to. Do not try this at home. But I use one that works, that's very gentle, and I don't do it very often, but oh, boy, it works. So don't try this at home if you're not sure. How's that for a qualification?
Well, let's take another call. Let's go on to Champaign, a listener in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hi. I have a weeping cherry tree that has been dying limb by limb this season. And now I notice there's little clusters of kind of an amber-colored, gelatinous-looking, I would assume,
yes,
kind of eggs. Do you know what that would be or what I can do?
Well, it's some type of borers, mm-hmm, that gets into there, and then the sap kind of congeals where they're in there. They tunnel around and partially girdle a plant, and if they girdle it under a branch, for instance, that branch will die. Mm-hmm. And then if they get down far enough down on the trunk that they cause enough damage, then the whole thing will die.
Okay. Is there anything that I can do to stop it?
It's a dormant oil that is used in early spring. Isn't that correct, Chuck?
It could be.
You might want to try to find the Home, Yard, and Garden newsletter. That's through the Champaign County, or any county extension has one. But Home, Yard, and Garden, and get the most up-to-date thing to do for borers. It's in a lot of different kind of cherry trees and some of the fruit trees.
And with most of those things, there's a real short period of time when they're adults, right, and are outside of the tree. And that's when a spray would be effective on them, as opposed to when they're inside the bark.
Yeah, I can see them now.
But it
wouldn't help to just pick them off.
Hey, it wouldn't hurt.
I guess you can pick them off.
It just may not be all of
usually
them.
Usually what you can see is just the gelatinous goo that comes out of the tree and not so much the insect.
I see.
I've heard of people taking like a flexible wire and kind of shoving it into their little burrow and trying to smash them, but I don't know how effective that is.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
You're welcome. And we take one more call this afternoon. A listener in Charleston on line 3. Hi.
Hi. I started a small herb garden this summer, and mm-hmm, I planted mesdom, which is a mix of greens also. And but the leaves started having holes of different sizes, and I know that they come from. I see also worms of the same color, so I just don't want to. I want to get rid of these worms because I don't want to have the idea that I'm
exactly
because this is I use them for salads.
You don't want to eat worms.
I have had the same situation mm-hmm, this summer.
So I just don't know what kind of product to use, and I don't want to use the commercial herbicides because mm-hmm, it's not good either. So I don't know what to do, how to get rid of these worms.
I had the same thing, and what I tried to do is periodically remove the older leaves, and I tried to keep picking just the younger leaves, and I would, you know, I didn't use anything at all except, you know, the way to time the picking, remove old and pick some of the newer, and I would always swish it through water and let it set. And I don't know if you have a salt-restricted diet, but if you put just a little bit of salt in the water, then they will rise, you know, everything. It will loosen if anything is there. But newer leaves are better, but you may have something else.
Well, Bacillus thuringiensis spray is a disease of caterpillars, and it doesn't harm humans, and that can be pretty effective, especially if you get them when they're small. So just spray with that.
What is it called?
Bacillus thuringiensis. It's sold as a BT, capital B, period, small T, period, BT uh-huh, spray. And you need to put it on probably every week or 10 days.
Okay.
And I don't know that there's an interval after you apply it before you can eat it. If it makes you nervous, which it shouldn't, you can use one of those washing compounds that they have now that you can wash your greens with, but if the worms you're talking about are caterpillars, then
it looks like they are.
Yeah, mm-hmm, that's a pretty effective spray against particularly when they're young.
Another thing I did for cabbage, which really gets affected by the little cabbage, you know, it's the looper. Is that what it is?
There's three of them.
So, and they get them all.
Ported cabbage moth, the cabbage looper, and the diamondback moth.
Yes. Well, I grew beautiful cabbage. I actually brought one that was 2 feet across to show on the show. It was just gorgeous. But I ended up making like a mini greenhouse, as the other viewer talked about, for tarping before the frost. So I had a little mini greenhouse, and I was able to, you know, they got the sun, but none of I kept the butterflies from laying the eggs.
Yeah, a floating row cover would do that same thing if you can just put it over and seal the edges.
Very much the same. I just can't see through the floating row cover. That really bothers me. I want to be able to see the crop get beautiful. And so I used that last year, and it was great. But then I let the cabbage get so far along because I keep forgetting to check it. But floating row cover works. Or making a frame and maybe using floating row cover with one plastic strip that you can see through. But they will get in and around and through it. So it's got to be the entire distance because they will get through.
And all the edges have to be under the soil so that they can't.
I put a board and a little bit of soil because they will get through.
Well, thank you very much. I hung up right now.
You're welcome.
Okay, thanks. Good luck. And before we go, we want to mention that people who like to garden, they might want to participate in Organic Gardening Day, Chuck.
Yes, it's coming up November 21st. This year, we're moving to the Hawthorne Suites in Champaign. Other than that, it's going to be the same format, the same everything. If you've come before, you're on the mailing list. That mailing should go out fairly soon. And we've got a good program. Hopefully some good vendors of garden products.
Maybe we'll have you back before the show.
That would be good.
We can
go through who's going to be there and what they're going to talk about and all those kinds of things.
Okay,
that'd be good.
When's the registration deadline? October?
It's usually...
Or early November.
Well, as long as there's space available. Okay. Hawthorne Suites is a little smaller than the Holiday Inn where we usually have it, so it's going to top out at 150.
Okay.
So if you're the 151st person, we might have to tell you, too bad.
But. Speaking of organic gardening and organic farming, I'm going to have on my guest on this program on October 7th, Tara Brockman, who is the author of The Seasons on Henry's Farm, A Year of Food and Life on a Sustainable Farm. Tara Brockman will join us October 7th. Well, thank you so much. We'll see you, I hope, not soon.
Yeah.
How about that?
Not so long and in between.
Yeah, not so long in between.
Thank you, Celeste.
Okay. Illinois Gardener is hosted by Diane Noland, and you can see it on our companion station, WILL-TV, on Thursdays at 7 p.m. and Saturday mornings at 11 a.m. And now we've got to turn things over to Todd Gleason. He has settlement prices for us from Chicago and Kansas City.
Indeed, I do, Celeste. The numbers like this in Chicago. On a Wednesday afternoon, futures from the wheat pit were lower. A nearby December contract of 473 and three quarters top, bottom at 56 and a quarter. Settlement price at $4.67 and a quarter, down 3 1/4. The March contract, $4.93, the high, the low at 76 and a quarter. Settlement price at 487, down 3 1/4. And the May futures, 504, the high, the low at 488 and three quarters. Settlement price at $4.99 and a half, down 3 1/4. July, the harvest month for the soft red, 511 1/2, the high, the low at 499, settled 510 1/4, down 3 cents. December in Kansas City, where the hard red is traded, down 2 1/4 today at $4.80. They took the frost out of the weather forecast, and that pushed the corn futures 10 1/4 lower today. 347 3/4 was the top for the nearby December, that is the lead option and the harvest month. 324 was the low. Settlement price at 336 1/4, down 10 1/4. For December corn futures, March contract 361, the high, the low at 37 1/4. Settlement price at $3.49 1/2, down 10 1/4. And the May futures, 370 1/4, the high, the low at 46 1/4. Settlement price at $3.58 3/4, down 10 1/4. July corn futures now 378, the high, the low at 55. Settlement price at $3.67, down 10 1/2 cents. And next year's December, the 2010 contract at 394 3/4, top, bottom at 72 1/2. Settlement price at $3.84 3/4, down 9 1/4 cents on this Wednesday afternoon. December oat futures settled unchanged at 217 1/4. The March at 230 1/4 were unchanged as well. Soy complex now, November bean futures, nearby contract 960 3/4, the high, the low at 928 1/4. Settlement price 950 1/2, 9 1/2 cents lower. January 964, the high, the low at 933. Settlement price at 955, down 9 cents. In the March 964, the high, the low at 935 3/4. Settled 956 3/4, down 10 3/4. May futures for the soy complex 965 1/2, the high, the low at 937. settled $9.56, down 10.5 cents. And next year's July, $9.58, down 11. November of 2010, a 9.30 settlement price, down 11.5, with a top of 39 and a bottom of $9.10.5. That in the November contract for 2010. October bean meal futures, 301.10 the high, the low at 289.70, settled 297.80, down 3.30. December at 294, down 4.30. October soybean oil, 34.43 the high, the low at 33.80. Settled 34.38, a nickel lower December, down 4 cents at 34.78 in the soybean oil December contract. I'll return in just about 9 minutes with the closing market report. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for Illinois Public Media comes from Syngenta, featuring AgriSure 3000 GT hybrids, designed to give you up to 38 bushels more per acre if you have rootworms, and an average of 3 more even if you don't. More information on Syngenta's AgriSure 3000 GT hybrids is at agrisuretraits.com.
Now let's take a look at the livestock contracts. October live cattle, the high today, 87.75, the low, 86.85. The settlement, 86.97.5, down 25. December, 87.20 the high, 86.40 the low, 86.65 the settlement, down 17.5. February, 88.02.5 the high, 87.20 the low, the settlement, 87.72.5, down 20. April, 89.92.5 the high, the low, 89.40, the settlement, 89.60, down 17.5. September feeder cattle, 98.75 the high, 98.25 the low, the settlement, 98.27.5, down 27.5. October, 98.95 the high, 98.35 the low, 98.45 the settlement, that up 2.5. November, 99.15 the high, 98.55 the low, the settlement, 98.55, down 20. January, 99.60 the high, 99.25 the low, 99.30 the settlement, that up a nickel. October lean hogs, 54.05 the high, 52.35 the low, the settlement, 52.45, down 97.5. December, the high today, 53.05, the low, 51.10, the settlement, 51.45, down 42.5. February, 59 even the high, 57.40 the low, 57.85 the settlement, down 35. April, 63.70 the high, 62.40 the low, the settlement, 62.87.5, down 35. And February bellies, 87.50 the high, the low, 86.02.5, the settlement, 86.57.5, down 122.5. The Dow currently up 96 at 97.79. The NASDAQ is up 25 at 21.27. The S&P 500 up 14 at 1,066. Nearby crude up 158 a barrel in New York, trading at $72.32 a barrel.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Baisdefer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC,